Accessibility Craft Podcast, where we explore the art of creating accessible websites while trying out interesting craft beverages. This podcast is brought to you by the team at Equalize Digital, a WordPress accessibility company and the proud creators of the Accessibility Checker plugin. And now, on to the show.
Today's speaker, I'm very excited to introduce, is Daniel Shutsmith. Daniel, I recently found out, and I lived in like Poughkeepsie, New York around the same time.
Right. Yeah.
And I have had the opportunity to really get to know him through Twitter and some of the work that he's doing there with the WP Talks that he is running. And I've heard him on other podcasts where he was talking a lot about accessibility. And so I just thought it would be really great to have Daniel come and speak to us today. So I'm going to stop sharing my screen.
Well, thank you.
I will let him take over.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for that. I totally forgot that we both knew each other from Poughkeepsie. and for those who are watching here, you may have seen my daughter come in. She's 9 years old. She'll probably be appearing again at some point in the presentation, just so you know. I work out of my home office. This was actually a closet before the pandemic, and it turned into my office. So I can actually touch all my walls here. So, but I've insulated pretty well. So we should be able to go on and have a good talk. Amber asked me to come on and talk a little bit about what we're doing at Pinellas County Government and the website redesign that we're working on. And we were trying to figure out what the topic would be. And my initial thinking was, well, you know, it's pretty big. And I think a lot of the accessibility projects, a lot of us feel like we're alone in it. So maybe I try to share a little bit about how we're kind of handling it as a team. And what we kind of implemented there to kind of follow. So everyone's kind of, you know, picking up the pieces to kind of put everything together for a good accessible experience. So my first slide here is just showing the title screen. It's showing a screenshot of our website over here on the right, just a little teaser, and also a screenshot of the mobile experience on the new website as well. My name, Daniel Shutsmith, and also I'm the Web Digital Project Manager at Pinellas County Government, and my pronouns are he, him. After the talk, you can always feel free to find me on Twitter. I'm usually tweeting about WordPress or accessibility. My Twitter handle is Shutsmith, my last name, which is Shutzsmith. And I'm also on WordPress.org. So you'll see over there, I'm also a WordCamp organizer. I'll actually be at WordCamp US 2022. And I've done it a few other times. So if you go, feel free to pull me aside and say hello. I'd love to meet you in person. So we're going to take a look at a bunch of different things. I put together a lot of slides here to kind of give you the whole perspective on how we've done everything. I will say that the site's not live yet, so we're right in testing mode right now, the QA testing phase, basically. The current site is at pinellascounty.org, so feel free to go there if you wanted to see the current site. This is the one we're moving away to into a nice new accessible experience instead of there. This is what it looks like. So I'm showing a screenshot on here on the slide of Pinellas County's website, pinellascounty.org. There's a few things you'll notice right away. It's small, so it doesn't have a lot of room to work with. It's a little bit of a dated look in a way. So you might say circa, I don't know, maybe 2008, 2007, something like that. And right off the bat, if you view this on your mobile phone, you'll notice right away that it's not very responsive and actually becomes a little bit more difficult to work with. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. The next thing I wanted to mention was that, you know, the website really acts as our main customer service platform. We average around 7.5 million unique visits per year in the past 10 years. Some years have been more, some years have been, you know, 9, almost 10 million a year. Some years have been around 6, but the average is around 7.5. Obviously, with the pandemic, we had a much higher demand because a lot of people wanted to know kind of what's going on, be able to get information, which is important to them. So we also created a microsite specifically for COVID-19 so people could go to that. And that kind of eased a little bit of the traffic and was also a responsive experience. So it made it a little bit easier to work with. And I'll talk about that in a little bit. The screenshot you see here on the slide is, again, the screenshot of our current website's homepage. So there was a few different things for us that we had to kind of deal with when looking at the current website and what was going on. I was hired literally a month before we shut down for COVID. So I was in the office, I think 3 weeks, maybe tops. It might've been 2.5. My role was really to come on board to help spearhead and kind of push forward this website redesign. And right away we started to, you know, realize there were certain things that we needed to kind of solve and look at a little bit deeper with a completely new website to work with. I'm just going to go through the bullets here. One of the first things was the completely static and difficult to update nature of the website. The website right now is straight up HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. It's edited with, you know, a code editor like Visual Studio Code, or it's edited with, honest to goodness, Dreamweaver. So going into Dreamweaver old school and editing some of those parts like that. So we're, you know, part of it is updating those tools. It's also not responsive. So if we're looking at it on a tablet, if we're looking at it on mobile, we'll notice that it has a really difficult time kind of, you know, getting to and looking at certain information inside of the browser. It's also older branding. So our branding for Pinellas County, Florida has changed a little bit. We still have the same logo there. And some people call it, I'm not even going to, a rooster's head. You can kind of see it if you look at it real close. but we still have the same logo, which we actually really, really enjoy. But the rest of the branding has changed. And so we have a really nice updated branding that kind of goes with the spirit of Pinellas County. For those that don't know, Pinellas County is in the Gulf of Mexico. We have Clearwater Beach, Palm Harbor, we have St. Pete, and a lot of great little towns like Tarpon Springs and such. And they're all coastal towns. And so a lot of the spirit of the county is really based around that you know, philosophy of being outdoors, being with nature, being in the water. And so a lot of it's, you know, reflected in the newer brand that I'm going to show you. And then the last thing here is we have found it's harder to find information on the current site. Many pieces of information are kind of siloed away in PDFs, so that's been a little bit difficult to work with. But the other big thing is that you know, there's just so much navigation on the current website. If you do take a look at it, and I'm not going to demo any of these sites, by the way, I think it'd be too much of a technical challenge right here. But if you look at any of the navigation on there and the headers, you'll notice that they're really large to kind of work with inside of there. And I noticed in the comments, someone mentioned that they used to teach Dreamweaver. I did too. So we're all in good company here. And this also, this slide contained a screenshot of the Pinellas County homepage as well. So why now? Why would we do it now? You know, why at this moment? One of the bigger things is that we've seen some major milestones happen. So I believe it was 2019. I should have wrote this down too. I'm pretty sure it was 2019. We actually saw the traffic of mobile devices surpass what was being done on desktop. And in 2021, we really started to see that increasing. Now in 2022, I think in some of the months I've looked at, we're like 65, maybe 70% sometimes as far as the amount of traffic that's from mobile over desktop. And so the lack of responsiveness, you know, and making it more accessible is really kind of an important thing, you know, at this point to really embark on. Another major factor is that COVID-19 had showed us all how important online services are. We had made a microsite, covid19.pinellascounty.org. It's still up. You can see that. We still update it with pertinent information. But that really had to be, you know, the main clearinghouse, the main place that people were to go to get information on what we were doing in Pinellas County for COVID-19. That site also acted as a proof of concept for the larger website. So that's built on WordPress. It's built responsively. It's built using a lot of the same tools and processes and techniques that I'll talk through here in the slides. And so, you know, that as a mini test really, really also provided us a quicker way to get out information to the public than it was for us to do in our normal static process and flow. So it was a nice win all around to be able to really help people get the information they want to get to, and for us to be able to show that, you know, there is a better way for us to be able to do these things. And then the final big thing is we can use pinellas.gov now. So you'll notice that our main URL right now is pinellascounty.org. But we also have pinellas.gov. And so we're slowly transitioning a lot of our URLs and our email addresses all over to pinellas.gov to make it a little bit more official. You know, right now, especially, there's a lot of different phishing scams that go on and just, you know, just incorrect, you know, information out there. So having that .gov domain really helps us a little bit, so people know that this is our site, this is what we're talking about. You know, we're putting out an official message for that part. So the new website will be pinellas.gov. The old URL, pinellascounty.org, will forward to that. And the screenshot on here on this slide is a screenshot of the current website in a nice fake mobile format here. So, you know, embarking on this, we knew what our issues were. We knew kind of why we had to do it now. So we really need to focus on what were the goals for this to really take off and to know what our success, you know, criteria would be, really. You know, what do we want to achieve? I have five different goals that we did. The first being mobile responsive. So, you know, that's not anything unexpected. So we really wanted to make sure that we were providing a mobile experience that makes sense, not just necessarily, you know, moving things around and making it pushing things around on the page, but also making it so that the mobile experience was a little bit easier to work with than if we had just given them a desktop experience in a mobile facade. So we put that in there now. The second goal was we wanted to make the content easier to find. So right now, if you were to go to the website, the current website, you'll notice that the search in the top is actually a Google search, which isn't a bad thing, but it doesn't always get the information that we want to get, want people to get. And also, you know, people going to it tend to get frustrated because they can't find the information they're looking for. There's no faceted search part to it, so you can't really drill down in content. You can't look like per department into these types of information or by topic area. And so that's, you know, the little bit that was lacking there. The third primary goal was for us to streamline accessibility compliance. And for us, that means getting as close to as possible to WCAG 2.1 AA. You know, I'll talk more about this in a little bit. For us, I don't think we'll ever see, you know, a website that's 100% compliant on a lot of the accessibility things that we're doing, but we're trying to get it as close as possible. And so that's why a lot of the processes we have in place and also some of the tools that I'll show you we use kind of help us get there and get to that position. The fourth primary goal is for us to refresh the design. So again, a forward-looking you know, outlook on the way everything looks and putting together the branding and being able to understand a little bit more on how to kind of tie it all together instead of a digital space. And then the fifth primary goal is to implement a CMS. So implementing a content management system so that it makes it a little bit easier for people to be able to edit the information. Right now, so we all know right now when someone has a request to change on the website, they have to send it to what's technically like our IT team. Then there's a ticket made and they, you know, may have follow-up questions. And that whole process, you know, could take a few hours, might take a few days, depending on what the request is. Our IT team is very, very good and very fast at what they do. But you know, of course, there's other things that come up. There's other priorities that we have in the daily pieces of what they're doing. And so the website doesn't become a major centerpiece for what they're supposed to be doing, their responsibilities. So by implementing a CMS, we can actually give, you know, those privileges to a lot of different people to be able to update their content. And so that's what we've done and implemented. And then the screenshot here is, again, the homepage for pinellascounty.org's current site. So one thing to realize is that for us, you may hear me say redesign a lot. And it's the easiest way for me to explain these things usually is to say it's a website redesign. But really, it's like a website overhaul. We're overhauling the technology, moving from a static environment, moving from a very strict kind of way of using HTML into a very fluid content management system and being able to move things around a little bit more gracefully. We're moving from a place where content was a little bit more difficult to edit or difficult to get to for most folks. And so now putting it in a way that's going to make it easier for them to work with and share. And we're doing an overhaul of the design and the user experience and really kind of focusing on making that a more accessible journey for a lot of people to be able to go in there and get the information they need, but also get it quickly. I don't know anyone who really wants to hang around on a government website. We usually want to get in and get out. And so a lot of that is focusing on that. It's giving the users that capability to get in there, get the information they want to get to, and go on with their day. Ancillarily, we'll talk about research here in just a little bit. It's one of the things we saw over and over again is people, were on mobile because they were just trying to find something real quick and be able to work with it. All right, my next slide here is about the inclusive approach we've taken. So we have four bullets here. So we did basically four different things that we focused on to make a more inclusive approach for the whole process. So not just necessarily the accessibility side, but the entire process of doing this website overhaul and working across teams. The first bullet is that we had a multi-department team of project liaisons. We call them project liaisons. It sounds snappy. It's fun. they're representatives of each of the departments. And I should have this memorized, but I believe we have around two dozen or so different departments and then many different divisions that are intertwined in there. What we did is each department presented one or two liaisons. So they had like one liaison who's like the main person, main representative, and then they have an alternate also. So there's a backup. And they're the folks that have been helping us all along the way from the get-go, all the way from design to coding to content to be a part of this journey with us. And they're also going to be there as the site goes live. So they're the same people that are going to be updating the content, that are going to be training, their replacements. So we've kind of included them all along the way. So rather than just, putting them, making a whole website, coming to them and saying, here it is, here's your training, here's how to use it. They've been there the whole time. So they've seen this journey. They've seen how everything's been put together. They've understood the decisions that we've made in getting, to where we are now. The second bullet is engage leadership in regular updates. So we do every quarter, we were trying to do director meetings. I think it's more like every 6 months about that. We do a director's meeting. This whole project has been about 2 years in the making, just so you know. And then we also do a monthly update as well with the liaisons. So it's us interfacing directly with them, going over kind of what we've accomplished in the past month, talking about the next month of what we'll be doing, and answering any questions that might have come up. Right now we're at the point where we're really in kind of like the bug QA private testing phase. So we're very far along and very close to launching. Our ETA is basically to say, later this year, we'll be launching this. And we know that my hunch is that it's going to be sometime around, like August or September, basically, but not tying any specific dates to it yet. The next bullet for our inclusive approach is inviting local accessibility groups and residents for feedback on old and new sites. So one of the key things that we found, and it's really interesting, we have so many different local accessibility groups here. And so what we found was that by reaching out to them, we were able to kind of have a regular what's the word I'm searching for? Kind of a regular consortium of, you know, folks that we can actually share this with and get them to play around with it and tell us what they think, that are natively using things like screen readers all the time, that are, you know, natively using maybe other assistive devices to look at our website. We have two methods of testing going on. So the first method of testing we're doing right now, and I'll talk about this more, is action testing. So we're giving people specific actions and things we want them to do and go through and do testing. But for our local accessibility groups, we're going to be starting their testing probably in about a month. And that's specifically going to be, you know, just have at it. Like, here's some example things that you might want to do, but we want to, you know, really get a sense of kind of how you usually use the old website and see how it compares with the new website. And some of that will be recorded. Some of that will be, you know, having them give us their direct feedback for that. And that's one of the things I'm really excited about too.
This episode of Accessibility Craft is sponsored by Equalized Digital Accessibility Checker, the WordPress plugin that helps you find accessibility problems before you hit publish. Thousands of businesses, nonprofits, universities, and government agencies around the world trust Accessibility Checker to help their teams find, fix, and prevent accessibility problems on an ongoing basis. New to accessibility? Equalized Digital Accessibility Checker is here to teach you every step of the way. Whether you're a content creator or a developer, our detailed documentation guides you through fixing accessibility issues. Never lose track of accessibility again with real-time scans each time you save, powerful reports inside the WordPress dashboard, and a front-end view to help you track down hard-to-find issues. Scan unlimited posts and pages with Accessibility Checker free. Upgrade to Accessibility Checker Pro to scan your website in bulk, whether it has 10 pages or 10,000. Download Accessibility Checker today at equalizeddigital.com/accessibility-checker. Use coupon code accessibilitycraft to save 10% on any plan.
And then for residents, we went ahead and had them give us feedback in a few different ways. So we have residents right now that are testing the site. So when I say residents, I mean folks that are located in one of the zip codes that's in the county. And we've also had a survey form on our website for a few months. I believe it was like 2 or 3 months in 2001, where we were asking, you know, anyone who's coming to give us feedback on the current website and kind of, you know, what were they there for, how did it work, things like that. And I'll talk about that in a little bit too. And then the last bullet here for an inclusive approach is we've acknowledged that we're all learning best practices and helping each other to progress with accessibility. I'm certainly no expert. I'm learning all the time. Amber and I had a call together, I think maybe it was like 3 months ago or something, and she taught me something in like 5 minutes that I had no idea about. And it's the kind of thing where, you know, we might be in this business for several years, but we're always learning, and we have to be open to that too. And that's also why I say there's a little bit of flexibility on, you know, we'll never be completely compliant with all accessibility requirements on a website. It's more about how close can we get and getting as close as possible. The next slide is about the research we've done. So I have a screenshot on the right hand of the slide that shows the heat map of our current website. For this, we used Hotjar. It's a service online that allows us to see basically how people are interacting with a website, with a web page. For research, we did three basic things. One was looking at traffic. So we were looking at things like the Google Analytics. We were looking at things like we use Site Improve, which is another service, which allows us to see a little bit on how people interact with the current website, where broken links are, things like that. And we used Hotjar to kind of see a little bit of that too, on that traffic and how people are interacting with it. And so that brings me to the second thing we did there with research, which was user behavior. So Hotjar really kind of opened our eyes to see how people were interacting with the site. One of the main things it showed us was really how far people were scrolling, and how they were kind of, you know, interacting with their mouse or their touch on their phones with different elements on the site. We were noticing there's actually a couple things on here a couple dots on here that aren't places that you would click on, but people think you would click on them just because of the way they look. And so for us, it was really important also to kind of, in the new design, to make sure that we're focusing on touch points, making sure that, you know, we're, you know, when we're talking about accessibility, it's not just about the code. It's not just about, you know, the colors. It's also about when someone's literally touching something or someone's trying to work with it, what are the parameters we give it for people to actually do that? And then the third thing for research was surveying. And so, like I said, we surveyed out to the public. We also surveyed internally a little bit as well. But the public's voice is what we were really looking for, to kind of see how people were interacting and working with the current website and what they were looking to achieve and weren't able to. And frankly, over and over again, it came back to kind of the same, some of the same things. We also learned from other websites as well. So there's a few different websites, other .gov sites that we looked at. On the screen here in the slide, I'm showing four different screenshots of homepages. The upper top left is the Miami-Dade homepage. And you'll notice that in the Miami-Dade screenshot, they have a big search box right in the middle when you get there. So the caveat of that is that you can start a search right away for anything, and it'll start to auto-populate and give you information based on what you're typing in. On the top right is a screenshot of the sandiego.gov website. And for that, they took a little bit different approach. They decided to have it a multi-step process, and specifically for their services. And we kind of gravitate towards this and really like that as well. They have the first step is to do something. So the text says, I need to, and then you can choose a drop down from there. The second step is to whatever it is, whatever you've chosen, it gives you more choices on what that those will be. So you can kind of drill down. And then the third step it gives you is a button, which is linked to wherever you need it to go to, and an href button, not a button. So it's nice and accessible. The bottom left is the government website from Arlington, Virginia. We just like the way that they were kind of using their menus and their hierarchy of content. And the bottom right is Utah.gov. Utah.gov is pretty widely cited as one of the best examples kind of government sites out there. I think when I was looking at it, we did notice there's some accessibility issues. So it's just interesting to see, you know, when sites get multiple awards, but they have some larger issues to them. But I think those are all been taken care of at this point. But again, they did a similar thing of, you know, putting a search right kind of front and center so people could see that as well. So for us, from all that and learning all, you know, seeing all the research, understanding the situation, understanding kind of what we're trying to achieve with those goals, we really needed to put together kind of our own approach to accessibility and how we would handle it. And pretty soon in that process, after I got hired, I mean, I think it might have been even within the first two weeks I was there, I was meeting with we have an actual accessibility director that oversees just all the accessibility across many different departments and other places within the county. And at that time, we had someone who was a former member of the Pass Yellow group that actually came on staff for us for a little bit. And so we met with them right at the beginning, and it was really exciting because. I think everyone was kind of surprised the direction we were taking because we wanted to be focused on accessibility from the get-go and include everyone as much as possible, which I think is sometimes unheard of, or maybe people say they want to do it, but they don't actually do it. But for us, it was really pretty important to do from the beginning. To do that, we have three distinct things we did, and that's what I'm going to read off here on the slide. The first thing we did, the first thing we wanted to do was to approach it as designing the website with accessibility in mind from the beginning, like I said. The second thing we wanted to do was code the website with proper accessibility standards, closest to WCAG 2.1 as possible. And the third thing we wanted to do was to use technology that supports accessibility when editing. And that, you know, that third one, using technology that supports accessibility when editing, I think is something that tends to get overlooked. We don't necessarily usually think about it. And I'm both saying in the front of someone who needs, you know, accessibility and accessible devices to be able to edit. So part of that, as well as the editors being able to understand, when you put this content out, is it going to be accessible? Is someone going to be able to use this with a screen reader? Is this going to be difficult to actually manage, you know, on a small phone with one hand, and those kinds of elements. And feel free to ask any questions too in the chat there, and we'll address those as well. Rebecca Chumley is asking, will we see a sneak peek of a new page? Yeah, we're going to look at a few designs, and if we have time, I mean, I'll even just bring up I'll just screen share of the current staging site so you can kind of see what it looks like. Okay, so like I said, we were approaching three different things. So we were approaching from a design perspective, from a code perspective, and from a technology perspective. So for design, for us, that meant first establishing a digital design system. So, you know, we had branding guidebooks, we had some types of things like that, you know, kind of mingling around the communications department, which is where I sit. But we didn't have something that was specifically for websites, for, you know, microsites, and something that we could use internally, but also give to a vendor. And so, you know, we looked at the initial branding of what we had recently done. I'm showing two screenshots here. One is a screenshot of the COVID-19 microsite homepage and what that looks like. Again, that's covid19.pinellascounty.org. And I'm showing a screenshot of the annual report that we did, which is a printed piece, but also, you know, distributed as a PDF online. And so we have some very distinct branding elements that go into there. Our colors are a little bit darker now in the background, so that the white pops more in the front foreground, so it's easier to read. We also shifted a lot of color palettes a little bit, you know, using more grays, light grays, things like that, that are in elements that would otherwise not, you know, be something we'd be too worried about as far as color contrast, but making it so that the contrast is enough to be reflected when we test it. And we also started using more iconography. So doubling up iconography with text so that people can understand more about what they're working with, what they're doing. And you'll see that there on the COVID-19 sites. That's something, you know, specifically that we tried to utilize there over and over again. Let's go to the next slide. So this is an example. So I'm showing a screenshot of Adobe XD. This is our design system right now. It's based off of a few different things, but you'll notice, I'll just explain this a little bit. On the top left, we see there's various logos. I mean, we call them waves, logos and waves that we have kind of set the standard here for that people can use. We also have even, you know, you'll see there's like a fave icon examples in there as well, that we went ahead and made sure that everything looks good. And also, again, you know, the colors make sense for what we're doing, and color contrasts all work. In the middle of this document, we also have color and type. So we show the different pieces of the color palette, the primary colors, the secondary colors, and we show the different pieces of typography and how we might work with them. On the far right, you can barely see it, but squeezing in there is our grid system. So this document is much larger. I only took a small screenshot part of it. The grid system allows us to make designs based on mobile view or tablet view or a large desktop view or a large view if we're talking about something else. We even have a view specifically for just, you know, 16:9 TVs, things like that. So when we're thinking about, you know, if something's going on there, what that'll look like, we have that too. And then we have a whole section of components at the bottom here. And the components really make up things from breadcrumbs to alert boxes to, you know, collapsing text and accordions and things like that, but as well as buttons, you know, and being very particular and letting people see what the examples are, what a button would look like and how we would use it. So this was kind of the first step we embarked into to be able to put those things together. In design. The second thing we did was we knew we wanted to design on top of a framework, a front end framework. And as we were looking at that design system, you might have noticed, if you've worked with Bootstrap before, it looks very familiar. And so that's exactly what we did here. So we worked with the Bootstrap framework. It's the URL for that is getbootstrap.com. I believe it's getbootstrap.com. And it's a front end framework that's been around for quite a while. But it keeps evolving and it keeps, you know, progressing. It's probably the most well-known front-end framework. So when I say front-end framework, I'm talking about CSS, HTML, and a little bit of JavaScript. But it's also probably the most hated front-end framework that people don't necessarily like to work with it. But here's my thinking and why we did that. For all of its flaws and for how long it's been around, the reality is it's become just like Microsoft Windows in a way, just like WordPress in a way, that we know that if we use that framework, we know there's a lot of people that will also be able to utilize that framework. We also know if something goes wrong with it, we have an endless amount of options to be able to fix something. And we know if we get into a corner or into a deep hole, chances are we'll be able to find the information online to help us get out of that and find a solution to that. So that's why we go with Bootstrap for this. And we'll keep doing that probably for the foreseeable future. One of the things that we did is we used a templated system called BootSketch. It is bootsketch.com, BootSketch.com. And so I'm just showing a screenshot here in the slide of the homepage of BootSketch. It is a templated system for Figma, Sketch, the design application Sketch, and Adobe XD. And so what it gives you are all those same components that I just showed you there. Let's go back to the design system. Most of these components you see here in there. So really in BootSketch, what we're doing is applying the correct level of styling, colors, and emphasis on different, you know, pieces of the information. For us, that was the smartest way to go for sure. It was not going to reinvent the wheel. And what it allows us to do is actually get these design pieces into designers' hands so they can play around with it. So we don't have to, you know, kind of compare apples to oranges, looking at HTML or trying to build inside the browser, which I know wouldn't necessarily work for what we were doing. And then the last thing for us in approaching design was to focus on touch areas. So the colors and the text hierarchy and looking at all of that from an accessible lens. Really looking at it of, you know, do these color combinations make sense? Not just do they pass contrast, but do they make sense in what we're doing? Are the touch areas making sense for what we're doing as well? Are ARIA labels making sense in kind of what we're looking to embark on there? Would it make sense from all the way from the design perspective? So even before we've done code, would these things make sense? Are we going to have to ignore a bunch of stuff on here that otherwise just shouldn't be there? On the screen here, I'm showing a screenshot of our example of a wireframe for an internal page. For wireframes, we used Balsamiq. It's still around. It's an older wireframe application, but it does a good job at kind of getting rid of the complexities of everything else in the interface of putting together a wireframe and just focusing on the essentials. For those that aren't familiar, a wireframe really is just focusing on where the content is going to go on an example page and the hierarchy of that content. So really understanding this might be an H1, that might be an H2, this might be an H3, and explaining to ourselves kind of what that layout would entail. We're not really focused on, we're not worried about the actual typography of this, like the actual font face. We're not worried about the coloring on this. You'll notice in this wireframe, it's mostly grays or black and white. We're really just focused on, you know, looking at the content, where it might go and in relation to each other. So we did this. We did wireframes. We did wireframes for several months, going through and actually looking at every single example of every piece of content that we would have. Not individual pages, but the types of content. And so we looked at multiple custom post types and what those would be for the templates. We looked at, you know, the pages and what those would be like, and you know, even events and news and everything else in between. Even forms, you know, to decide kind of how would we lay out our forms, where would we put our labels, you know, what would that look like? As I said, for this whole process, we had the liaisons and the directors involved to kind of see this and evolve and also give us feedback. So they were there for, you know, the wireframes from the beginning to see kind of what we were thinking about for the homepage, what we were thinking about for these internal pages, and to give us their feedback on it all along the way. Really exciting, because I don't think I've ever done that at any other place I've been. And I've been in a lot of different larger nonprofit organizations before this. And so this was really kind of, you know, something different. And I think it was more exciting to kind of see how excited people were that they were able to see, you know, these pieces coming together. The next slide here is a screenshot of Adobe XD showing three different designs. One is a responsive mobile version of our homepage and what that looks like on the left. In the middle is a desktop version of the design for what we just saw in the wireframe that we looked at. And on the right is a version of the design without any types of graphics inside of it. So only text. If we were looking at a text hierarchy, what that would look like, what that would entail. For a lot of this, you know, we were focusing on what is that content hierarchy? If you look at the current website, should have put a slide in here that showed the current website too. You know, we saw it in 10 slides already. But if you look at the current website, what you'll notice is that a lot of the headings look to be the exact same font size. Sometimes they're the exact same color. So there's no hierarchy visually for anyone to kind of understand what's going on. The other key issue that we noticed too is that there's no landmarks being used on some of the content. And so we wanted to make sure that, you know, you can vary just looking at this design. If you're familiar with landmarks and doing things like, you know, setting roles basically for different areas of content on here, like saying something's a navigation, saying something's a main area, saying something's a side, you know, sidebar or whatever. You can see the separation of those pieces right in this visual design comp. So you can really quickly kind of understand kind of how things are put together. So it's a good cue for folks that are seeing it visually. And then coupling that with the correct code becomes a good cue for anyone who's looking at it audibly and being able to get that information. And the next screenshot is another one of Adobe XD, and this has evolved a little bit more. So now we're showing the homepage design on the far left of what that looks like. We're showing then two topic page designs. That's the one where you see with the animals and pets in the middle, and also home and property. And on the far right is one that we started for, I think it was maybe a subtopic. Yeah, subtopic alternate at the time. In this, you'll notice a few things. So the hierarchy on the homepage on the left, you know, we're really focusing on, we still have a lot of content we have to deal with, but we're focusing on using different things like the separations of colors, the separations of like of text size as well, and being able to kind of show it in different ways. The lower you go on the page, you'll start to see more iconography show up as well. So people get more definition from different elements of content. On the other pages here, the topic, the two topic pages and the subtopic page, at the top, you'll notice it's a similar user pattern that we kind of have on the homepage as well. But below it, you'll notice we have a kind of a faceted search. And so this is an element that we put into there, into the site over and over again. What it allows us to do, well, I shouldn't say over and over, it's really on the topics page and in the search results page. What it allows us to do is having people be able to drill down into the content and to look for specific things they might be looking for. So this is really intended to replace Google search, but also provide a really quick method for people, you know, looking for a specific topic, looking maybe for a specific piece of, you know, information, be able to get to it rather quickly. And we'll get back to that more. I'll show you a few other things we threw in there as well. This just, you'll see that we did a comparison. I think this was the first one, which is a topic page alternate, which is the dogs, and the other one with home and property on the right. You'll notice we even were doing, this is when we were doing tests on what that sidebar will look like. So you notice the sidebar on the right one has a grayish background to give a little more distinction and shows some other pieces below it. So we really tried to, you know, make it so that we were using colors, iconography to kind of create those different areas that would make sense visually as you're working with it, but also, you know, coupling it with the code that we would put in there as well. The other key thing to look at in here too is that we really focused on making everything touchable. So when you look at, for example, like these results that are going there, when you're clicking on it, you're not necessarily just clicking on the title there. Clicking anywhere in that box is going to take you to that specific thing. So when you're on mobile, it makes it much easier to be able to get to the specific content rather than having to, you know, zoom in or click on a small little link. They're larger surface areas to be able to work with. So really simple if you're just doing something one-handed, you know, and you have, you know, your coffee in your other hand or whatever, all these things make it much more easier to work with. And then the larger thing that we kind of came up with was this idea of quick find, which has been renamed to I want to. So I want to do something on this website. How do I get to do it? How do I do it? How can I get to it the quickest way? For this, you know, we were finding that, as you know, looking at those examples that we saw. So the screenshot here is showing the quick find. It's a three-step process. It's mimicking the examples we saw from some of the other websites, such as Utah.gov, Miami-Dade, and a few others. But it's going a step further to make it a little bit more just straightforward kind of one to work with. So we do it as a three-step process. We also have the search in there as well. This goes right on the homepage, so anyone's able to get to it. Some of the things that we found, I mean, the main things we found with research was that people were coming to the website 9 times out of 10 to really just focus on doing a specific task. So they're looking to pay a water bill, or to get information on, you know, electric hookup, or trying to, you know, report a stray dog or something like that. And so they wanted to get right to figuring out where that information was and quickly. What we found in user testing already is that people are gravitating towards this and basically wanting to have everything in there. They're really liking the concept. They're liking that they can go in there. They can find the information real quickly. And now I think to the point of they might even want us to expand it more. And so that's what we're looking at, is how would we possibly expand it more into other pieces of content across the site there. All right. So that's everything we did for design and approaching that. For approaching code, we took it a little bit, you know, similar. So for us, the first thing was to focus on building on a child of the PicoStrap theme, using that Bootstrap front end. PicoStrap is a WordPress theme. It's a WordPress starter theme. You can actually just use that if you want to, or you could build a child theme off of it. We opted to go the child theme route because if there was ever any you know, security updates or anything like that, we would always be able to utilize those. So we built a child theme off of it. Before this, some of our previous websites were built on Understrap. So if you've done themes in the past and with Bootstrap, you may have seen that before. Understrap was pretty popular to create WordPress themes with Bootstrap. There was a little bit of a kerfuffle in the about 2 years ago or so, where Understrap was like going through some growing pains and changing hands, and no one really knew where the operation was going. It was an open source thing, and so at that time we just knew we had to commit to something, and PicoStrap really looked the best at the time. It's still really, really good to use, and we really kind of love it. The big thing about PicoStrap and the way it works is that we can still use things like SAS. And if you're not a developer, don't even worry about it. You don't need to look it up. But SAS just allows us to do some more interesting things, basically, with the styles, what we're working with. And specifically for accessibility, I found it actually to be a really quick time saver for us to understand if something's not accessible, to make a whole suite of things accessible really quickly. And especially when we're talking about colors, or we're talking about you know, the touch points and making something larger to kind of work with. So it's been really kind of a joy to work with it in that sense. The big differentiator in the Pico strap and the way it works for folks that are more technically minded, this does PHP SAS, so you don't need to install Node or anything else to make it work. So basically, you're just updating your code, you're just refreshing your browser window, and the code's updated, you know, right there. So that's a really nice way to kind of work. The second thing we did for approaching code was looking at really implementing the accessibility for WCAG 2.1. And, you know, for that, a lot of it's been focused on really looking at everything over and over again and testing as we kind of go along. I thought I knew a lot about the accessibility guidelines and what the standards were, and this has proved I did not. So there's a lot of things that we had to realize that are way more than just contrast to look at. I think the biggest thing that was an eye-opener for me was the way we work with landmarks and things, and the way we kind of need to work with different area labels and even hiding specific things with area hidden. And I'm a New Yorker, so I always say aria. I don't know if I say it right, but that's how it comes out. With that, you know, we focus a lot on testing as we go along. So this is an example of, I think there's just a page template. This is literally probably an example I had from a real case here. We go through and basically use two different tools. So we use the Axe Dev Tools, which is an add-on for Chrome. In our case, we're using Chrome, we're using Edge as well, because we're Microsoft-based for most of the things we're doing. I found it really beneficial for us to get very concise information on things that we're trying to understand and work with. But then we also use the Wave Accessibility Evaluation Tool, which is by WebAIM. This has been around a while. I think it might have been one of the first you know, Chrome extensions out there basically that could help us do this testing and be able to see these things. The thing I've always liked about it a lot is being able to see, visually see on the page when we're testing and looking at things, visually see this iconography of you know, where the issues are. The screenshot I'm showing here is of the Wave tool. And in it, we see actual icons of like where the alternative text is, or where a NoScript element might be, or where a YouTube link might be. One of the very interesting things too is there's this little code box you'll see at the bottom of the screenshot. And so you can click on the elements on the left side here, and it actually shows up for you on the right side and highlights that code there. It has been updated in, I think, 2 years, but it still works really great. And it especially works well if you're trying to share this with folks that might not understand code as much. Because, you know, when we're looking back at the Axe tool, you can kind of get it. And if you look at the highlight, this is a screenshot of the Axe tool, and it's very dark. The highlighted section has a little bit of code in it. But to that anyone looking in the outside, it looks like there's just this one thing you're looking at, this one element, basically. But when you look at the Wave tool, you see multiple elements on the screen. You see all these icons that are showing up on there. And so it gives someone the visual sense, really, of like, okay, like you might see a lot of sea of red icons, and that means there's a ton of errors on that page. And so it's a really good way to convey that to someone. So I use that internally. I used to use that on my own freelance clients, you know, back in the day. So it's one little trick I think that's been really valuable in kind of working with the. And then the last part is approaching content. I have a visitor, one of my 9-year-old daughter's hovering. The last part is approaching content. So for that, we have the first thing we start with is implementing accessibility checking at the editing level. So like I said before, actually giving them the tools, giving the editors the tools. So in our case, it's department liaisons. We also have what are called PIOs. Those are public information officers. You'll see them, you know, around government. Those are usually the people you see on TV that are talking about something going on. And a PIO, same thing. So they have access to be able to make edits to the website as well. For that, we're actually using Equalize Digital's accessibility checker. We looked at several different, and this wasn't there's this wasn't planned with Amber at all. It's just we found it to be a really great tool to use. I haven't found anything else that was giving us the detail on the back end in a way that was explaining it to non-technical people. And this visually, you know, when you look at the screen here, the screenshot I'm showing is the accessibility checker in the block editor. It's showing the summary of what things have passed. It's showing a big red box of the errors. In this case, there was 12 errors. It's showing a green box of contrast errors, which shows none. 17 warnings on the page, which is in yellow. And then ignored items, which is in blue. It also shows us the reading level. So it shows us that this is a 12th grade or more reading level on there. These were all really important things to us because right away, just looking at editing one of these pages, you know, we've brought in this content from the other website. We're talking about thousands of pages. I think at one time we were like 4,000 to 6,000 different pages. We're talking like 4,000 PDFs. Like there's a lot of content that we were converting and changing. We've dwindled things down and, you know, made it more cohesive now, but it's still thousands of pages. But the reality is, you know, we need to be able to see that and to be able to look at that. And one of the things the Accessibility Checker plugin did for us too is we got the pro version so we can be able to scan the entire site and see all those elements inside of there. For that, we're able to, you know, really get a good sense kind of what pages we still need to work on and kind of mess around with. You want to say hi? Say hi real quick, super quick. Wave. Say hi. Okay, wonderful. All right. Good night. Go on. Okay, thank you. Sorry, the life of dad. So the other thing for this, and now I'm showing a screenshot of the accessibility checker. For this, it's showing just details of what we see on the page. So we can be able to kind of see those specific things on there. And again, you know, it's just making it a little bit more straightforward for people to see and understand. The second thing here is, you know, for approaching content, we also wanted to train on the importance of content hierarchy and image alt text, especially. You know, where's the two places that we see most often that people aren't doing an accessible page? It's using, you know, H1s all over the place. It's, you know, moving headings, you know, in directions that don't work. And it's, you know, not having alt text over and over again. So it was important for us to kind of address that and teach people right away. Some of you may have heard me on the WP Builds. Actually, no, it was on the Tavern, WP Tavern's podcast, talking a little bit about this. And so what I was mentioning was we actually built just a page in the back end. That's a website admin help page. This is actually a real page that we edit in the back end. We're set to a private page. It's using Gutenberg, you know, the block editor. So anyone can edit this on the admin team, but everyone sees it. So the way it's set up is, you know, it's there. It's basically accessible for anyone that needs to edit the website to be able to see this information. The screenshot I'm showing here is the website admin help section in the back end of WordPress. So it's like wp-admin/, you know, help basically is the location of that. Inside of it, we have two different columns. So the left column talks about the recorded webinars we did, where we went through these walkthroughs. They're about an hour long, showing people how to work with content all the way from editing something to understand the accessibility checker to being able to, you know, put their images in there. The next section is showing a little bit about the block editor. So how do we use it? And those are videos that we made ourselves. So those are quick, you know, 3-minute videos basically to kind of understand all that stuff. And then the last section here is we have a section called Working with Accessibility in Mind. And that really focuses on specific accessibility things for everyone to kind of know. You might recognize some of those links. The first link's Understanding Web Accessibility, which is a Medium article that I thought was really kind of a great understanding for people coming in at, you know, a basic level to kind of understand a little bit more why we do this, why it's important. We also have using the accessibility checker that actually goes out to a YouTube video. I think you actually did that, Amber. So that goes out to that video. The third link on there is how to act and understand accessibility right now. And that I recently added, that's a webinar from the, what was it? Not Passiella Group. It was, Deck, is that how you say it? Deck or DeQ? I always get it wrong. The folks that make Axe, they did a webinar there. But they did a webinar specifically about governments, nonprofits, and COVID. DeQ, okay. Governments, nonprofits, and COVID, and accessibility, and how to deal with it with the web now that more people are coming. And so I thought it was really important for our folks to be able to see that. And then the other links are, there's a link on why we don't use overlays, and that's the more comical one for people to see why we don't have, an overlay on the front end of the website trying to handle the accessibility pieces. And if you're not familiar with an overlay, don't even worry about it. You don't need to get into it. But, you know, just getting people to understand on our end why we're not doing that. The last one's the ingredients of an accessible PDF. And so, like I said, we have a ton of PDFs that we have there. We've been going through diligently trying to make them all accessible as well, and verifying them basically in Acrobat to do that, Adobe Acrobat. So this is a link out to Adobe's system of saying, you know, what are the steps, what are the ingredients you need for an accessible PDF there. A side tangent, if anyone knows and has data, I would love to see more data on accessible PDFs or charts that show more about, you know, why we make accessible PDFs, how to do it, things like that. I've had a heck of a time in the past 2 years trying to find really good, concise information like that. And looking at, you know, a lot of places where you usually would for research, it doesn't exist as far as I could tell. So if you have anything like that, do feel free to share it with me. I'd love to see it. All right. And so the last thing we did for approaching content, and this is the last whole section of this, so we're almost wrapping it up, is rewriting content above an eighth grade reading level. So anything that was, you know, basically 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, we tried to get it to 8th or 9th grade reading level inside of there. And I believe WCAG wants 8th grade, right? Something like that. So we're really trying to bring it down as much as we could so that it's easier for folks to understand. There's also, you know, the benefit that we've talked about internally a lot is that we might have content now. You know, we'll get dinged a little bit because of the redesign and the change of domains and stuff for our SEO, but we might have content now that'll actually play better on Google because we've brought down the jargon, because we've actually made it more available and accessible to actually read. And so that type of thing, you know, excites me as well to be able to do that. So with all that, those are all the big things we did. With all that, where are we now? What are we doing? So right now, our progress so far, so we've done thousands of posts rewritten and tweaked for accessibility. We're currently user testing, and most of that user testing, like I said, is more functional testing, like, you know, tell me how you go ahead and set up a new bill with your water system type of thing. And then we'll start doing very aggressive kind of accessibility testing soon with folks using screen readers specifically and other assistive devices. And then next thing we're looking at is possibly kind of a wide public testing phase as well. It all depends on, you know, our timing, when we think we're going to go live, but the chances are is we'll probably try to do something where the general public can also come and give us more feedback on what we've put together. If anyone here is interested in testing, I mean, I'll put you in now, not tonight, but soon to be able to kind of play around with it. And I'll give you the URL and all that stuff. So you can give us feedback on that as well. I'd be forever grateful for any other, you know, feedback I get from folks, especially from this group. So I thank you so much. That's the bulk of everything I have to share. Like I said, I think the site will probably be launching later this year. I know it will, because I can't go on another year with this not being launched. And just let me know if you want to test it all. And I'm happy to answer any questions and things like that.
This was a fabulous talk. Thank you so much.
Oh, cool.
So interesting. If anyone wants to throw some questions in the chat, there was one or two, and I wrote down a few while you were talking. One easy one maybe is, what were you using to customize the admin dashboard? Did you style that and move things around yourself? Did you use a separate plugin for that?
Yeah, so I have these little tricks that I've been tweeting about, and there's a larger thing that I've been kind of starting to trickle out to folks to show my tricks of the trade. For that, I'm using Admin Menu Editor Pro. So it's, I believe it's adminmenueditorpro.com. So just like it sounds, the site looks kind of sketchy. It doesn't look like it actually works, but it's a fabulous tool. It's still being maintained, and it really allows you to control the entire admin section. I must have used like 20 different admin, you know, overrides basically over the years, trying to do different things, different plugins, different, you know, frameworks or whatever. Every time it would slow something down or mess something else up. Admin Menu Editor Pro is the only one I've seen where like it's focused on what it does. That's it. It's straight up PHP. It doesn't mess with any other plugins that are in there. And you know, you can basically turn things on and off as you want to. And it'll control everything. So not just the colors and such, but it'll turn off blocks. It'll be able to add in new pieces, new styles into the admin section without having to do it in your theme at all. It's a lot of different stuff.
I really liked when you were showing it that you had grouped certain post types under evergreen content heading. And then there were other post types that were under a heading of timely content. And I feel like I'm constantly explaining this to clients, why you would make something a post and not a page. And you doing this, I think really kind of helps to funnel people into putting their content in the right place, I think.
Yeah. I totally, it's so funny because like we're so used to it now and we've been doing this for like 8 months. So I totally overlooked it. But yeah, that was one of the first things we kind of put in there was differentiating that content so that our folks knew, like, when would I use this? Why would I use this? So there's also a hierarchy. I'm showing right now the screenshot of the WordPress admin and showing the sidebar there with those groupings of evergreen content, timely content. So under evergreen content, you know, it made sense. We put it in the order of the importance. So pages is the most important thing. Most of the content goes in there. The second one's services. The next one's parks. Parks is third because it gets almost all the traffic, you know, for a lot of the things that are going on a typical day. So, you know, the hierarchy makes sense in the back end as well for what we're doing.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I'm definitely going to have to go check out both the sketchy website and the plugin that is awesome. There's a couple of comments that it looks so neat and organized. Thanks for sharing.
Yep. And Peter mentioned too this that he had read before, or they'd read before, about high contrast can also be a problem. And we'd seen that too. Basically, whenever we're using contrast of a light color on a background, I'm really just going to color analyzers to make sure that I'm passing all the different sizes, basically, that you'd see in WCAG. So as long as I'm passing them and we're not hearing, you know, feedback from folks saying that like the color is reverberating and it's, you know, too difficult for them to read, then we've been okay with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm kind of curious, maybe I have some rapid fire questions while we give people a couple more minutes to type any other questions they might have. So the first one was, you mentioned thousands of pages of content. How many content creators do you have on this site?
So in total liaisons, oh boy, I had this. The total liaisons was over 50, but I can't remember how many. I don't think we were at 100, but I'm sure we were over 50. Actually, let's play a game. I'm not going to share my screen for this because I'm going to go into the back end and look at
that. Oh yeah. You don't want to show everybody's email addresses.
Exactly.
But yeah.
I'm just looking around my camera here. Yeah. It's, 55 total liaisons inside of there. And then, about 12 different PIOs, the public information officers, and then you have 6 admins. So it's a good amount of people.
Had most of them never used WordPress before?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, out of 70 something, like 4 have, you know, it's a large percentage of people who had not used WordPress before, who had not even looked at code before, who basically live in Microsoft Word or Excel spreadsheets. And so that was also a big thing of like, well, if we're doing this, we're doing this the right way. We're not using classic editors and such. We're doing this with the block editor. They're going to get used to it that way. And so there's a little bit of learning curve for some folks, but now everyone would not go back. Like, they like this way. Like, they like doing it this way, kind of working with it. So,
Yeah, that's good to hear. Jean asks, does each town have a section and access to the county site?
They do have sections. So there, we do have like a little overview about each town, like a landing page basically, but they don't have access and they don't, it doesn't, it's not more than a link out to their places. I think most of that's just, we don't, we're a county, government and they're local government. And so those two things usually don't go together that way as far as access, but we have reached out to them before and we have regular liaisons that talk to them or our PIOs talk to them to get that kind of information and put that on there.
Okay. Thomas was wondering regarding your three steps sort of design that you have on the homepage, have you A/B tested having that, that three steps versus one single search box to get user feedback?
Right. Yeah, we haven't yet. That's actually a good question because we were talking about that last week because we saw some folks. So this is interesting. Let me just share my screen now so you can actually see that part. Let's see. I'm going to share my screen of the actual site. Let's make sure this works. And I'll change the ratio here a little bit. Does that seem like an okay size?
Yeah, that looks a little better, I think. Not quite so okay. Zoomed out.
Okay. For that, yeah, we were thinking the same thing. So one of the things we've noticed is that people tend to want to look for the word find in here. Like find, find the adoption center for dogs or find, whatever it is. For some reason, in folks' minds, from what they're telling us and what they're writing and what they're showing us, it's weird. Like we gravitate towards the word find, the actual word. And so we did have that in here before and took it out because people were just going to that over and over again, like find this, find that, rather than, pay for your water bill, like find where to pay for my water bill is kind of how the way people think about it. To which we started thinking about, maybe we should actually just have one search and try it that way because we do have Ajax going here already. So, they could be able to start typing something in and it'll actually, give them different places on there. And we're still refining this too. We actually can bubble up specific ones we want to show here. And that's all done with search WP, which is another plugin in the back end.
I wonder if you could resolve that by changing the wording on your label for your dropdown. Instead of just saying, what would you like to do? It would be, what would you like to find? And then they won't look for the word find because you've already suggested find to them. And so now they're moving on to the second step of that or the second part of that sentence in their head.
Dang it, Amber,
I don't know. You're probably
right. That's actually great. Yeah, I'm going to suggest that in our morning meeting tomorrow.
So I was sort of curious going back to like the design because you showed like you did a very intense design process where you did wireframing and you built out all of the components and did your accessibility testing then, which is awesome. And I'm curious, did you do that? Do you have an in-house designer? Did you contract that out through, I guess, an RFP process? Like what was that like?
So, most of this was me. So we have a very small team.
You're multi-talented.
I'm one of those generalists that can do a lot of things because, we're, what are we, Gen Xers, where we get lost in between generations, but we were able to do a lot of things and be able to, adapt to whatever we got to adapt to. But I started out as a developer and then quickly moved into design and then moved into project management. So all these things are already, things I'm already well capable of. We did have in-house designers. What we did was have them help us with the branding aspects to that. They're more print-based than video-based. So it made sense for us to get those branding aspects from them, kind of like, what are our guidelines? What do we have, the constraints we need to work within? And then how can we apply them to what we're doing digitally? And just getting their approval on that, just getting the okay that like, this makes sense. Like, this is a good embarkment and journey we're going on. So that's really what it's been.
That's cool. Did you know at the beginning of the process that it would take as long as it has taken? From a timeline perspective? Has it always been like on this timeline?
Pretty much. I mean, I predicted it would be about a year and a half. COVID obviously messed us up. I think it was like the first week I started work was February 2020. Yeah. My main task was the website redesign at that time. So I had started right away kind of figuring these things out and planning things out. And then COVID happened. We were basically stalled for about, I'd say maybe 6 months, where it was just focusing on COVID. Because you got to remember, we had the COVID website to put together, which we flew by that COVID-19 website and put it together in, I think, 3 weeks. So everything from a completely unique design to building everything in to figuring out what servers would make sense. And because we saw so many sites having issues, like a lot of different governments were building COVID sites. A lot of different governments were trying to do this thing. And all I kept seeing and I kept fearing was, what if we try to build this site and it goes down, and we get a flood of people and we can't deal with it. Right now, this is hosted on a normal WordPress host. But when we originally created it, we put it on Netlify. So it was a static site. So it was WordPress, but we pushed out static code into Netlify to actually put it out there. So when we made updates, we were using WP to static was the plugin. I think they may have renamed it now. And that was pushing out the code up there. And it worked really great for about, I don't know, maybe a year and a half, something like that. And then we decided to actually put on WordPress because the traffic died down and it just made more sense to be a little bit easier to work with.
That's cool.
But it was WordPress all along. It's just, now it's what you see is what you get.
Yeah. It was more of a headless implementation of WordPress.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yep.
I do kind of wonder, how do we all get clients that understand that it might take a year for them to build their website? I need my website in a month from now, and it's going to have 40 different unique page designs, right?
You know what? We could talk forever too. My background was in advertising in New York City. And I did that for about 9 years, maybe a little bit longer. But you get used to being laid off, losing clients, going through ups and downs, ebbs and flows, basically. And then I moved to focusing more on nonprofit work and working with nonprofits. And that's where I started working with like Greenpeace and Oxfam and Amnesty and doing large implementations of large websites, especially on WordPress or Drupal. And so what I noticed was that in the ad world, it's all about like you'd never tell the truth. Like if you think something's going to take 3 months and the client wants it in a month, say, okay, we'll get it done in a month. But in the nonprofit space and what you're doing, if you say that, you're going to lose the client because they don't want to hear, they don't want to hear fluff. They want to know the reality. Like if we have to get this out the door, we need to make fundraising season, would this be done in time? And so really quickly I learned that I just literally had to be upfront and just say how long I really think things took. So I've gotten pretty good at estimating, like if something's going to take a long time and just explain that ahead of time. And I had a great boss at Amnesty that taught me to really set expectations for a lot of the meetings I have with stakeholders so that people really understand and get it in their heads of what we're talking about. So, we talk about a new website. We're not necessarily talking about this is done in, 2 months or something. We're talking about this is a long-term haul that we're going to need your participation in. We'll need your some of your employees' participation in to be able to help us really achieve this together as a team. So, yeah, it's interesting.
So I will say, because it was in the chat, was there an overlay on that website? On the COVID
one? Yeah, on the COVID one, yeah.
But
yeah,
you guys have decided not to do that on the new site?
Yeah, no, not on the new site. That one is, that has no errors, though, too. So it's just like an extra on that site.
Is that a WordPress overlay, or that's like an outside of WordPress?
It was...
Oh, someone said UserWay. We've got a couple of people.
UserWay. Yep. UserWay. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. It was at the time, I think it was just like an add-on and folks liked how it worked, but I was like, we're not doing this on the main website. But it should pass. If we look at all the pages, unless people messed up content, I didn't see it. Every single one of the pages should pass. So
yeah. Even, yeah, you don't think an overlay is necessary on that website,
right?
Is what you're saying.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Well, we're pretty much at our time. I don't think there's any other questions in chat. I really have appreciated getting a look at this process and how detailed you were. I feel like it's been a great opportunity. Can you say again, there were a couple of people who did post that they'd be interested in like helping you test and giving you feedback. Is Twitter the best way to get a hold of you? How can people get a hold of you if they want to follow up?
Yeah, actually, let me paste my contact info.
I think Paula just put your Twitter back in. Yep.
Twitter's good. I know not everyone goes to Twitter, but Twitter's good. Or you can contact me. I just put my email address there too. It's dschutzsmith@pinellascounty.org. I just say Twitter usually because I know that I'll get it. Sometimes our spam filters are really heavy at work. So it becomes a little more difficult sometimes with folks from the outside sending us stuff. But you can try email and back it up with a tweet.
Yeah,
for sure.
Well, that's awesome. Thank you so much. Thank you, everyone, for coming. Yeah, thank you. I hope everyone has a great evening. Do not forget about Thursday at 2 p.m. Central Time. We're going to have a really awesome panel discussion for Global Accessibility Awareness Day. And you can get the information off our meetup page. Thanks, everyone.
Great. Thank you. Have a good night.
You too.
Thanks for listening to Accessibility Craft. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe in your podcast app to get notified when future episodes release. You can find Accessibility Craft on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And if building accessibility awareness is important to you, please consider rating Accessibility Craft 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Accessibility Craft is produced by Equalize Digital and hosted by Amber Hines, Chris Hines, and Steve Jones. Steve Jones composed our theme music. Learn how we help make thousands of WordPress websites more accessible at equalizedigital.com.